Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to another division preview on the Next Fan Up podcast. Hi everybody, I'm Pod Vader. And we have another division preview. This time we go to the NFC and the NFC East, where we'll have Neil, our Redskins superfan, Sam, our Giants superfan, Kevin, our Cowboys superfan, and James, the Eagles superfan, breaking down what they believe is the best division in football. I'm not so sure, but that's what they like to say, and they're going to give us a whole bunch of reasons why they believe it. If you disagree with anything that we have to say, then please send us an email like Duggan did. Duggan sent us an email about the AFC North podcast, which you can go and find right now on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, anywhere great podcasts are heard. But he wrote us nextfanup@gmail.com. The podcast was good. However, there's no way Scotty is a Bengals fan. If he's not excited for this season, he never will be. He then provided 7 reasons why Scotty was wrong on defense, 7 reasons why Scotty was wrong on offense, and 3 reasons why Scotty was wrong on special teams, added 2 more paragraphs, and then said, "This is my short breakdown after listening to the podcast for the AFC North." Duggan, we will actually read your email in its entirety at the end of all of our division previews. We'll pair it up with a bunch of the email reaction and Twitter reaction that we get from all of you out there listening to this show right now. So do send us an email, just like Duggan, at nextfanup@gmail.com. And of course, you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And if you want to get even longer form but don't want to send an email, you can check us out, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. All of our podcasts are there, and you can just hit a reply and type in just as long as a reply as Duggan did about the Cincinnati Bengals. I will have my win-loss predictions for every game for the NFC East after I allow the NFC East superfans to discuss their division. And here is Neil to kick it all off.
Hello, listener. Hello, world. Here we are, the NFC East preview show. You've heard the dross. You've heard the AFC teams, and oh, that's just pathetic. Now we get to the proper division, the NFC East, the best division in football, without a shadow of a doubt. And yeah, I'm here with the 3 lucky guys who support these great teams. I'm Neil, your Washington Redskins super fan, and we have got coming in from New York. We have first of all Sam, our New York Giants super fan. Sam, the New York Giants.
Hey, how's it going?
Heading up or heading down?
We're the only team that can stop the Patriots, so. For the rest of the league, we better hope we're good.
That's for sure. Also in New York, in a different zone, we've got Kevin, our Dallas Cowboys superfan. Kevin, what's happening in New York tonight?
Not much. It's a little drizzly. How are you, Neil, James, Sam? I'm glad we all 4 of us agree that the Cowboys were the best team in division before this pod started. I'm sorry that I had to let that little secret go, but now the world knows and we can all move on.
And finally, last but certainly not least, the team who maybe have the arrow pointing highest with their young quarterback, James, Eagles fan. Good to hear from you, James.
Hey, guys. Please forgive our Cowboys and Giants super fans. They have apparently bumped their heads on something before we recorded this podcast today.
Yeah, it's James, I think, come the end of this show, we're certainly going to be looking at Washington and Philadelphia rising high in this division. I've got a funny feeling. Anyway, out of respect to Kevin and his ultra-lucky Cowboys, we will... his ultra-lucky 13-3 Cowboys, I think it was last year, Kevin, before you lost... Before you lost rather dismally in the playoffs, which is, I think, something you're used to in recent history. Let's hear from you. Give us some key additions for the Dallas Cowboys as they approach the 2017 season.
Well, thank you, Neil. Well, some key additions for the Cowboys. Unfortunately, none of those really came through free agency. I mean, I would say the biggest free agent acquisition we picked up. Let's see, was it really Nolan Carroll? I mean, it probably was. We added Nolan Carroll, Steven Paella, or however you pronounce him, former Bears and Lions, I think, defensive tackle.
And Washington?
And Washington, yeah. And a former Rod Marinelli protege, even with his time in Chicago. So it's good they're reunited. I think he pretty much sort of negates the loss of Terrell McLean, who headed over to you guys, Neil.
Yep.
I'm trying to think who else the Cowboys even did sign in free agency. No one major. So I'd say the draft. I really like the Cowboys draft, and I think that's where a lot of the big names are going to come from for the Cowboys this year regarding the young players. I mean, everyone knows about Taco Bell, Charlton. The Cowboys are expecting a lot from him. We need a lot from him just because our pass rush needs all the help it can get. And you can sympathize with that, Neil. The Eagles and Giants can't really sympathize with that because they have pretty good D-lines. So me and you are probably pretty jealous of those front sevens, front fours right about now. But we will have our day. I will tell you that, Neil. And then Jordan Lewis and Cheeto Awuzie out of Colorado. Those are very interesting secondary players the Cowboys got. Cheeto is very versatile. Could play corners, safety, even in the slot. And then a Cowboys fan favorite, the sixth-round pick, Xavier Woods. Everyone seems to love him. People think that he could replace Barry Church. Think he could also play in the slot as well. Another versatile player. So the Cowboys got really young in the secondary this draft, which is good. Now hopefully those picks can pan out. But there's no really other big names the Cowboys brought in this year. DeMarcus Lawrence, the Cowboys are hoping he can recover from some back problems, some off-season surgery. The Cowboys rookie fourth-round pick last year that actually never played, Charles Tapper, super athletic. There's YouTube footage of him chasing Amari Cooper down the field back when they were both in their college days. It's pretty miraculous feat, fun to watch. But unfortunately, he suffered a back injury training camp last year and missed the entire season. But there's sort of expectations on him to help this defensive line. But other than that, not really any missing names that you don't know about for the Cowboys. The offense pretty much remains the same.
Any coaching changes?
Coaching changes? Oh, my. Absolutely not. Still got Linehan, still got Marinelli, still got the reigning NFL coach of the year, Jason Garrett. So, I mean, it's very stable, which is good for Dak and young Ezekiel Elliott, wouldn't you guys think? One last thing I forgot to say, though. Ryan Switzer, a fourth-round pick, it seems like he's going to be a big part of the offense this year. Him and Cole Beasley going to work interchangeably in the slot. Maybe have him be on the field on the same time, get some nifty formations and stuff like that. So, to me, that sounds like Lucky Whitehead, our fifth wide receiver and return specialist for the last 2 years. Seems like he's all but on his way out. And Bryce Butler, who we were signed for a one-year deal, may be out too because the Cowboys drafted a wide receiver, Noah Brown, out of Ohio State in the seventh round, who is a big body, really good run blocker. So both Bryce Butler and Lucky Whitehead could be out, and we could have two new young wide receivers rounding out our wide receiver core. And also, Rico Gathers, we should try to keep his name in the back of our mind. Cowboys sixth-round pick from last year, sort of Jerry's newest project. He was a Baylor basketball player, didn't even play football in college. Sort of had a red shirt last year, spent the entire year on the practice squad. And the hope is that he's going to step in and be the second-string tight end this year, at worst, third-string tight end. So we'll see how that goes. I'm sort of not that optimistic for it, but a lot of people like what they see in camp right now, but they're not really doing much in pads, so it's not really – I don't really hang much merit on those things.
Okay. And what about James? James, do you see a weakness at Dallas at the tight end position? Maybe they should have added somebody there Because what's behind Jason Witten? Probably not much.
I've never really noticed the depth behind Jason Witten. Who was the backup last year? I mean, they don't really run a lot of two tight end sets. Witten.
Yeah. I mean, it was really... Gavin Escobar last year. I mean, the Cowboys have had Martellus Bennett, Escobar. Witten's always on the field, so he doesn't do anything.
True. Witten's the passing option, and whoever the second tight end is, you can pretty much guarantee they're running to his side, you know, especially if it's a run-heavy formation, even with the two tight ends out there. The only weaknesses I see so far is, you know, them taking Nolan Carroll off our hands. You're welcome, by the way. You know, good luck when he gets turned inside out a couple of times this season, especially on double moves and straight go routes. He's wonderful, you know, watching the ball sail over his head. So
hasn't he already been arrested?
He has been arrested recently as well. So there's that too.
Yes. How could I forget about his DUI just like 3 days ago?
The perfect cowboy. Mm-hmm. So, Sam, what do you think? Should Dallas have added something else here to this team?
I don't know. I still think that secondary isn't impressive on Dallas. It seems like the area where the Packers took advantage of it in the playoffs. I don't think they've done enough to really help themselves there. But, I mean, as long as they have those three players on offense, and Prescott, Dez, and Zeke, I think we'll be in a good place for years to come with that offensive line.
Mm. Yeah, agreed.
Speaking of offensive line.
Yeah, go, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, James. Our offense is going to need to stay on the field for pretty much like they did last year and in 2014. But speaking of offensive line, there's been a bit of turnover on the Cowboys offensive line that I failed to bring up. I mean, everyone knows Doug Free retired. And Ronald Leary was signed by the Broncos in free agency. So that sort of leaves two spots available on the line. Word on the street is the Cowboys are going to try Lael Collins, who would be the left guard fill-in for Ronald Leary, and Lyle was actually supposed to start at left guard for all of last year, but he ended up getting hurt, and Leary sort of took his place and did what he did and got a big payday from the Broncos for it. So good for him. But the word on the street is he's going to move out to right tackle for the season, and we're going to try either Jonathan Cooper or Chaz Green out at left guard. Jonathan Cooper, of course, the bust 2013 seventh overall pick. But I think the Cowboys' offense line is still in good shape. Lyle Collins, I mean, that whole incident sucked for him, but honestly, he's coming back, and the Cowboys are benefiting from it beautifully, so can't complain from that.
But Kevin, do we know how good Lyle Collins is yet? He hasn't really played long enough, has he?
He hasn't played that much, no, but he played a lot in 2015. He obviously had some growing pains in 2015, but he flashed a lot of potential. He's super athletic, which is why we can sort of put him out at right tackle, or at least attempt to put him out at right tackle. He's got all the traits and everything that a good offensive lineman has, and he's definitely put together some few good games. I mean, it always helps playing in between Tyrone Smith and Travis Frederick. So, but he'll have the same luxury this year. So, I mean, I think Lyle Collins is definitely more than confident to replace either Ronald Leary or Doug Free, whichever one it may end up being.
Okay, so you mentioned key subtractions being, you know, especially Leary, I suppose, and Doug Free. Any other subtractions from this roster or coaching staff that may make a difference?
Yeah, there's, as I mentioned earlier, we brought in a lot of new young names in the secondary, and we did that because we lost so many of our starters last year. We lost Barry Church to the Bucks, I think. To the Jaguars. We lost J.J. Wilcox, another safety to the Bucks. We lost both our starting corners and Brandon Carr, who never missed a game for the Cowboys, despite what everything has to say about it. Some fair, some not so fair. At least he was on the field, and we could rely on him to play every snap. And then Morris Claiborne, of course, is now on the Jets, who improved drastically last year. But once again, he got hurt after five games. So although he's sort of improved his play the last 2 years, he's never healthy. So that doesn't mean no good. So
I read today that Morris Claiborne thinks he is one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL.
I feel like you ask any corner, they say that. I mean, as a corner, you just have to be extremely competent, bordering narcissistic.
True. Okay, you're not going to miss those guys in the secondary, maybe, Kevin, but what about you, Sam? Are you going to miss those guys in the Dallas secondary?
I mean, if those guys were playing, I just can't imagine who's behind them that's going to have to step up. So as sad as it is to see those guys go, it may be exciting to see who they have behind them.
Yeah. I mean, we still have Byron Jones, who is going to be in his third year now, sort of the veteran now in that secondary, which is a little scary. And you guys, do you remember Jeff Heath? He sort of had made some big plays against Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs last year.
Oh, yeah.
We're sort of hoping he replaces Barry Church. If not, the guy I mentioned earlier in my rant, Xavier Woods, our sixth-round pick, I really like him a lot. I think he could definitely be a strong safety by the year's end. But all reports is Jeff Heath is going to get the first crack at it to replace Barry Church. And in his limited playing time, he has a few interceptions and forced fumbles in his career. I mean, he almost single-handedly brought us back against Green Bay with his interception. I'm not even going to go back to that game. But anyways, yes, Jeff Heath, he might be a player that no one's heard of that come week 10, if the Cowboys are right and he is good and they like what they see from him, that could be a player that may become a household name just because he's also on the Cowboys. But he may make something of himself this year, which would be great.
Okay, well, we all look forward to hearing the fans chanting Heath for 10 seconds every game. All right, what about key games coming up for you? What's going to be the defining games in your schedule this year, Kevin? Where are the pressure points?
Yeah, I mean, of course, always the six divisional games are crucial. I mean, I think the first five games the Cowboys come off the bat is really, really tricky. We need to start off well, obviously, but we open with the Giants, which we do every year. So that's a crucial game. Then we got the Broncos and the Cardinals, both away, I believe. So those are two pretty hard games. Definitely got to split them. And then we sort of have I'm not going to go through the whole schedule here, obviously. But then we got the Rams. Hopefully that's an easy win. And then we got the Packers. So our first five games are really important. I would be happy with coming out of those five games 3-2, to be honest with you. Prefer 4-1, but that's a really tough first five games, in my opinion. And then, of course, at the end of the year, we have those December, November divisional games that are always important. But one game that I have my eye on at the end of the year is the Cowboys-Seahawks matchup in early December or late November, I forget. But that could be really important for perhaps the one seed in the NFC conference.
Oh, hey. What sort of nonsense is that? We're trying to keep some reality in this podcast. One seed.
You're right. Even if the Cowboys did lose that game, that'd probably be their first loss. So let me get back to reality.
Great. All right, Kevin, at the end of the season, what is the Dallas Cowboys record going to be? And we promise not to giggle at this point, but carry on.
No, I'm a very rational fan, as you all know. I mean, I feel like I've said this for the past literally 10 years, but I feel the Cowboys will be 11-5, 10-6. I mean, I see no reason. I think they will definitely not repeat their 13-3 record. Not to say that they're going to be a worse team, but it's just hard to go 13-3 again. Yeah. A lot of things got to go your way. But I do think 11-5 is a perfectly legitimate prediction, and the Cowboys could easily do that. I know Vegas has them at 9.5 wins, which, I mean, if they got 9 wins, I'd be furious. Might go Tim Falcons on everyone and quit, but no, I wouldn't do that. But 11 wins is my prediction for the Cowboys this year.
And Sam, do you see this being a huge season for Dak Prescott? Is that the guy we're watching as other teams in the division?
I expect him to see a little bit of a second-year slump, I think. I don't think he can be as good, but maybe he'll surprise us. I think he'll be somewhere near the same. I think Ezekiel will be better, so it may not even make that much of a difference.
And what about you, James? Where do you see the issues rising in Dallas if they're going to have a slightly worse season this year?
Defense, actually. And this the unit in its entirety, they still, at least from my perspective, doesn't look like they've addressed the defensive line to acquire any key pass rushers via free agency or the draft. And of course, the secondary is what it is. I can't speak. Our secondary is no better. But defense as a whole, it will probably be the biggest Achilles heel for Dallas this season. So like I said earlier, their offense will be their best defense. They'll have to ground and pound and, you know, keep opposition's defenses on the field, wear them down and, you know, go up that quick 14-3, 21-6 type score to put pressure on the other offenses to make mistakes and trying to catch up with them. If they can stay healthy on offense and barring their big three getting hurt in any way, shape, or form, no reason they shouldn't repeat as division champions, unfortunately.
Okay. And Kevin, I'm going to have to pin you down. 11-5 or 10-6?
Oh, 11-5. 11-5. 10-6 is too boring. But also, can I say one more thing, Mr. Yep. Scotland?
Of course you can, Mr. New York.
I was trying to think of something better, but I wasn't quick-witted enough on this day. So I apologize, fans and audience everywhere. DeMontre Moore, a former New York Giants third-round pick, sort of been a journeyman throughout the league. A lot of potential, a lot of off-field problems. Shocker, shocker, found his way on the Dallas Cowboys. But all the things I'm reading is he's having a really nice offseason. So, and he sort of had a nice end to last season with the Seahawks, I think he was on. So if we can get any sort of production from him, that would be a great, nice addition to our defensive line. And I think Marinelli can get something out of him. So I think, honestly,
Sam?
I agree with everyone that the Cowboys' weak spot is defense, but I am a little optimistic that our defense, it could actually be better this year than it was last year. I mean, it's not saying much, but it's saying a little.
Sam, is Moore going to help out that 14th ranked defense?
No.
Listen, there we go.
He sounds like every Giants fan when he was on our team. It just, they'll have like one game where he has two sacks on some offensive linemen, and then he's going to disappear. Oh, sorry, I didn't realize I was asleep. He's going to just, and then disappear the rest of the season. So.
Did you hear that, Kevin? That was a one-word response from Sam there.
No, I did hear that, and he has every reason to believe that's exactly what will happen. I just, for his sake, I hope he's wrong.
That's the Dallas Cowboys. Now we can the rest of us cannot feel quite so dirty talking about Dallas. And we can move on to the New York Giants, second in the division last year. And I'm going to say, since I can't find it in my notes, 11-5, 10-6 last year. Sam?
Sounds right. We were 10-6.
Okay, yeah.
What first wild card.
And then why don't you tell us the key additions that New York has made in order to get to that number one spot in the division?
I guess the biggest offseason addition would be Brandon Marshall. He came over from the other side of town. And with Brandon Marshall, you know, you get about 16 months of a number one wide receiver before and everything goes downhill. So we signed him to a two-year deal, not a lot of money. He should really pick up a lot of attention. Our offense last year was, I don't think, a shock to anybody, but horrendous. It was really anything Odell can do and then just nothing behind him. Sterling Shepard was okay. He should be a little bit better in his second year. But then, you know, you sign Marshall, so that gives another huge target on the other side of the field. You bring in Evan Engram, who was our first-round pick, who I'm not happy about, but all reports out of camp say he's going to be a huge star. So I just don't think there's a natural fit for him on this offense right now, but if they really thought he was the best player, then I'm sure they'll find something for him. On the defensive side of the ball, there was no real big additions. We had a great defense last year. We didn't really lose anybody. They took Dalvin Tomlinson in the second round, the huge defensive tackle out of Alabama, and it seems like he's going to be the next Damon Harrison, which is always something you want to hear. He doesn't do much in the pass rush game, but with Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul, I don't think they need him to. I just kind of wish we brought in a linebacker. been a problem for a really long time with the Giants, and we didn't do much to fix it. So it'll be interesting to see what we do there if we just rely on that defensive line to really generate all the pressure. In the secondary, it's Eli Apple, Janoris Jenkins, Dominique Rodgers, Cromartie, Landon Collins, all names everybody knows, all impressive players. Darian Thompson's the free safety. He was injured a little bit last year, but when he was on the field, he was always making a difference. He's supposedly healthy. He's ready to go this year. So that's five players across the secondary that you can count on. There were a lot of defensive players left in the draft that would have made a huge impact on this team, and taking Evan Engram just didn't seem right. The Giants also signed Duke Iheanacho, who name you see a lot. He's an Oak. Yeah, he's not great. I think that was the only other signing. We brought in Geno Smith to compete for the second QB role. I don't think that's going to do much. We've totally ignored our offensive line because that usually solves the issue. We brought in DJ Fluker, but he's just another 320-pound turnstile, so not going to be good there. So it's up to Eli to negate how bad this offensive line is. He has a lot of targets. Given a minimal amount of time, he should be able to produce and be able to put points on the board. But that's really it. There's nothing fancy that the Giants brought in besides Brandon Marshall.
I guess the question I would have for you, Sam, is what about the running game?
Oh, I think they turned that over to Paul Perkins. They brought in Sean Drone, who's another 3.5 yard per carry career guy. That's not impressive. We lost Rashad Jennings. And they still have Shane Vereen. So, you know, somewhere there, they're going to try to get the 70 yards rushing a game, if that, and do most of their damage in the air using Paul Perkins and Vereen to out of the backfield. Perkins showed promise. He might be a little too small to be a every down running back in this league, but I don't know. I think they're going to patch it together. I don't think there's any long-term solution on the roster right now.
And James, when you look at the Giants roster, where do you see weakness?
If I said Eli Manning, would that be wrong? Because, every year that, you know, towards the end, when you guys sort of play mediocre football and, you know, you come up to Philadelphia or we come to New York, Eli likes being Santa Claus. And he proved it again last year where you guys pretty much needed to win some combination of the last three games and play Philadelphia, I believe, in week 16. On the Thursday night, Eli was Santa Claus, basically. He basically helped us out with about two or three picks. Very abysmal play. The defense did do its part. The front seven did get in his face a lot. So, yeah, a lot of those are hurry throws, but some of those are very just bad throws by Eli Manning. And I'm not knocking him as, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He has two rings to back that up and, you know, a tenured resume. But, you know, as far as my squad is concerned, I honestly like playing the Giants because I never know which Eli we're going to get. You know, good Eli pretty much doesn't turn the ball over a lot, but he's not efficient. And bad Eli is just giving away presents. So I still see Eli as a weakness on that offense, you know, going forward, from the offensive line, of course.
The good thing about Eli is he's either good or bad. A lot of quarterbacks just are slightly below average the whole season, and they don't give their chance a team to win. But Eli, on his good days, when he goes on to run in the playoffs, gives us a chance to win. He's usually good for 9 or 10 wins in getting into the playoffs. So as far as quarterbacks around the league, I look around. Eli's not great, but he's a lot better than, you know, a lot of these guys across the league who, even on their best day, aren't really going to help a team win a playoff game.
That is true.
Kevin? What do you think?
I think I have a different opinion of the Giants than James over there. I mean, just because Eli honestly absolutely destroys the Cowboys every time he plays us, except for maybe the last time, our second regular season game against the Giants last year. But that was just an offensive performance by both teams. But the Giants still won. But, I mean, the Giants' weak spot, obviously, is their offensive line and running game. As Sam said, they did really nothing to improve their offense line for whatever reason that may be. I don't know. And Paul Perkins and Shane Vereen, it's like a nice tandem, but I don't think it's a top half of the league tandem. I mean, and Shane Vereen's coming off an injury, so who knows even what he'll be like. He's probably over 30 at this point. And you guys have really – who do you guys have besides Vereen and Perkins? You said Sean Drones. I mean, yeah, he himself is not going to do anything.
Yeah, I don't think – I don't think we need to be in the top half of the league. I think if we sit around 18, 20 with the high-powered or passing offenses, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know
– And then – but Jim no, Reed, I agree with you.
Jim Reed came back – he came back last year. He looks okay. We'll see what he does with the full off season.
Yeah, I mean, where I do agree with James is if Eli is consistently good this year, the Giants' offense will be a problem for everyone. I mean, getting Brandon Marshall, having him and Odell on opposite sides with Sterling Shepard or now Evan Engram in the slot. I mean, that Giants' offense is going to be a force to deal with if Eli can consistently play good football, which for the last 2 years he hasn't, because I mean, Sam, based on me watching the few Giants games I have from start to finish, the last 2 years the Giants offense honestly has been below average. It's been the bottom half of the league. Without Odell Beckham, you guys honestly have nothing. I mean, there were plenty of games last year that you guys won that you shouldn't have. I mean, I just feel that the Giants offense is so underwhelming all the time for the last 2 years, but that could just be me.
It's the, it's a 25th ranked offense in the league last year.
Oh, 25th?
Yeah, but
yep.
It's a lack of skill. I mean, last year they were trotting out the rotting corpse of Victor Cruz, who's hosting an MTV reality show now, and Sterling Shepard in his rookie year and Larry Donnell, who's never met a tackle he doesn't love in his whole
life. Yeah, but Larry Donnell's had like a pretty good season in 2014. And with Sterling Shepard and OBJ, I mean, Victor Cruz was deteriorating by the minute, but he was still competent to play last year. I mean, Eli should have done more should have put up better numbers with what he had.
It was not a good offense, I think. I haven't been impressed with McAdoo, his offensive game plan in general. I don't understand it. Kevin Gilbride, at least there was a method to his stupidity, but McAdoo is just uniquely, just every game he does another thing that makes you scratch your head, and it just seems obvious to me from the couch that there is a good offense with those players. He's just not getting it out of them.
Okay, moving on, that you lost our coaching staff from the team.
No, losses. We lost Rashad Jennings and Victor Cruz, who are replaceable players, and Jonathan Hankins, who went to the Packers. We just replaced him in the draft with Tomlinson. So it should be a good defense. They lost Cody Sensabaugh, who was our fourth safety. So in terms of people we lost, it's been a pretty good offseason for us.
Hankins went to the Colts. Is that right? The Colts.
The Colts. Sorry, it's the Colts. Yeah, not the Packers.
He's a good player.
He's good, but he's replaceable. I don't know. He's one of the – I don't think he's a top 25 defensive tackle in the league, I think. I think he's
okay, and before,
he was easily – yeah.
No, when you go, finish off, Sam.
Yeah, he was the fourth best player on that defensive line and took advantage of defenses not really caring about him.
Yeah. Okay, and before we move on to the player who we don't know about, who we are going to know about at the end of the season, just give us a word on the big story of the week in this very quiet news week. Odell Beckham, not at OTAs. How devastating the Giants season.
Yeah, this is – I hate – all this stuff around Odell Beckham so much because none of it actually matters. Wide receivers and really players who do this to their bodies. He's out training in LA. It's not like he's partying in Miami this time. He just has his own method. He has his own way he wants to get into it. It's like the fourth of 13 OTAs this offseason. Just let him be, you know, it's fine. He'll be there at training camp. He doesn't raise any other problems. He's one of the four best wide receivers in the league. I don't know. I feel like didn't all Diva wide receivers act this way? I can't imagine what they would have been like if Twitter was around now. You know, like Kevin said before that you have to be narcissistic to play a quarterback. I think all elite wide receivers are just divas.
And James, how many hours sleep have you lost worrying about Odell?
Who? Wait, Odell? What? Did he do something big? I mean, because OTAs, as far as I'm concerned, OTAs are not important to me. I look at them like, I mean, at one point they emphasized that these were optional. You know, OTAs at this point are only key for rookies, maybe first, second year players at best to show up. If veterans show up, cool. That's wonderful. They can teach the new kids how do we do things. This is the system we're going to run. This is how we train. That's about it. I really don't care about the veterans not showing up, especially if they're three-year veterans or more. After your third year, if you show up, you don't show up, who cares? Other than that, yeah, if you're a rookie, first-year player, second year, depending on how good you were, not a big, you know, those are the people who should be there at OTAs. I'd be more surprised if, like, the Giants' first-round draft pick didn't show up.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on then, Sam. Give us the player on your roster who we don't know about, but we're going to know about come the end of the season.
All right. Actually, there's been a lot of reports coming out of training camp of this third-year tight end, Matt Dukas. Larry Donnell's not going to be playing. I don't even know if he's on the team. They may have cut him this offseason. He's really my least favorite player. If I see his name, my eyes kind of roll to the back of my head, and I lose all control of my senses. So they brought in Matt Dukas, who he's a third-year player. They re-signed him. He's going to be our blocking tight end. He has some good hands, glowing reports out of training camp. So Eli has a way of making big white tight ends really, really, really effective, and that's what he is. So probably by season's end, you may have heard his name, but, you know, you never know with these guys.
Fair enough. Okay, and in your season coming up, what's going to be the key games? What are the pressure points in your schedule?
You know what? This is like the first time the Giants schedule I've looked at it, and I've been excited because finishing in second place last year really blessed us. I think we end the season, there's a stretch that goes Kansas City, Washington, Oakland, Dallas, Philly, Cardinals, Washington. That's just a bunch of good teams all in a row. And even if, you know, Philly and Washington and Dallas, one of those teams aren't good, it's division games. They're always tough. And then you throw in the Cardinals who, I mean, they should be good. They have a bunch of good players. And then you go Kansas City and Oakland, two teams that should be good also. It's just a tough way to end the season. The Giants usually start slow. So if we're looking to make up wins in the back half, it's going to be tough. So I'm hoping we can take advantage. We really just play size of division games. We played just the Seahawks in the first nine games and the Broncos, who that team is. I haven't even really thought about them with the quarterback and whole situation there. So really it's just a game Seattle at home, so we're not even going out west for them. So it's a favorable start, and I think you have to have at least 6-7 wins by the time we hit Kansas City for that end of the season run.
It's worth pointing out, of course, guys, for all of us, that we're playing the AFC West this year. So that's going to be, they're probably the next best division in football. So it's going to be some big games there. Okay, Sam, give us your win and loss for the end of the season. What's your record going to be?
I think it's 10-6. You know, we're not consistent enough. We have a lot of question marks, and I don't think we could finish much better than that. I also think we have enough skill that we don't really finish. I think our floor is probably 8 wins without injuries. So I'm a little more optimistic about this team and this defense especially, so I'm going to go 10-6.
Okay, finishing third in the division last season, the Washington Redskins with their 8-7-1 record following that horrendous tie in London against the Cincinnati Bengals, which was, oh God, what a depressing afternoon that was. I think Liverpool lost in the afternoon after that game. So my weekend was completely ruined by my sporting teams, which has become an all-too-regular occurrence over the last 10 or 15 years. Anyway, the key additions for Washington, I think certainly we got your lad, Terrell McLean, Kevin. Hopefully he can fit in and play one of the defensive end positions. We also had Stacey McGee from the Raiders, who will probably play a little bit of the nose tackle position as well as defensive end. We picked up DJ Swearinger from the Cardinals to play free safety. just another in a long line of dismal safeties coming to Washington. And I don't think it's going to be any better with DJ. From the offensive side of the ball, we picked up wide receiver Terrell Pryor from Cleveland, who I think is a really interesting addition. Big, fast wide receiver. Had a good season with Cleveland last year, and maybe with better quarterback play, he'll have an even better season this coming year. I think that was a really underrated pickup for Washington. And in the draft, of course, we picked up Jonathan Allen, drafted him. He seemed to fall to us. I think probably a top 10 talent, and fell to us at 17. And of our 10 draft picks, we selected 6 defensive players. And I think that certainly points to the fact that our defense is, I think, ranked 28th in the league, as opposed to our third-ranked offense. So I think if we can just improve that to middle-of-the-road defense, we'll probably have a better season than we did last year. But whether they've done enough to do that, I don't know. We have the great man of the people, Junior Gallette, coming back for a season to see if he can tear another Achilles tendon. I'm not sure how many he's got left to tear, but he'll be there in camp. We added Zach Brown from Buffalo, who was a Pro Bowler last year, the inside linebacker position. But what do you make of a team who lets a Pro Bowler go without really much of a fight? I'm not sure, so we'll see what happens with Zach Brown, if he's any good or not. We re-signed Morgan Moses, our right tackle, made him the highest paid right tackle in the game, and I think that's fully deserving. He's a super player, really, really good, developed well since being a third round pick for us. And yeah, I think that's probably it in terms of additions. Do you think Washington have done enough defensively there, Kevin?
I think you guys got a great deal in draft with Jonathan Allen. I forget who I was arguing with on draft day, but saying that Jonathan Allen was not athletic, not anything. But anyways, I think Jonathan Allen was a great fit for you, and obviously a position of need for you guys. What you guys are hearing right now is a beautiful train sound. I hope that doesn't bother you. Hopefully it goes away soon. But I think that the Redskins defense is still going to be a problem. I mean, as you mentioned, they brought in Swearinger. I mean, he seems like another safety, just like you said, who's primed for a few deep coverage busts, few 15-yard hard-hitting personal fouls. So that should be good for us. But I think the Redskins got worse over the offseason, Neil. As much as I love Kirk Cousins, you lost Garcon and DeSean Jackson and really only replaced them with Terrell Pryor. I do love Terrell Pryor, but...
Okay, let me just get to those key subtractions then, because there's been quite a lot of them. And as you say, the two wide receivers, Jackson and Garcon, we'll see how big a loss that is when we've got Doxon coming in after an injured rookie season. And Pryor.
That's true. I did forget about Doxon.
But we also lost our general manager, Scott McLuhan, in a rather bizarre, and really, I don't think we've really heard the full story about why he was released. But he's
that
gone.
Was beyond bizarre, Neil, because it made it seem like they didn't even let him do his job.
Yeah, but then they used his draft board on draft day, which I thought was a bit cheeky.
Exactly.
But tell me, I mean, it was a completely bizarre situation, and what the ramifications of that down the line, who knows how that will affect the front office. But actually, the draft and free agency went okay, but I liked Scott McLuhan an awful lot. We also lost some guy I didn't like very much. That was Joe Barry, our defensive coordinator. He's gone. And he could have gone last year for me. I mean, he was terrible. So now we've replaced him with Greg Minuski, who did play for Washington back in the late 80s as a linebacker. He's now a defensive coordinator.
Hasn't he been the Colts defensive coordinator for the last few years?
Yeah, he's been around, hasn't he? I mean, do we want the Colts defensive coordinator?
that's all I was thinking. Like, what?
I would say that's an up-in-the-air question, because the Colts don't really have any talent on defense, considering they threw all their money into the offense.
That's also
so you gotta
that's
take
being
that into
fair,
account
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, that's fair comment, James. Yeah. Anyway, he's a defensive coordinator, and we of course got the great Jim Tom Sula, who's come in to be our D line coach, and he was great. I watched him in the scouting combine. He was giving those linemen in the scouting combine, he was giving them hell all the way through the tests. It was fantastic to watch. So, and I think he's a good defensive line coach. He wasn't the greatest head coach in the world, but when it comes to the defensive line, he knows his stuff. So he's in there. So major changes on defense. And well, when you're 28th in the league, you can't be much worse. Can you, Sam? Sure.
I mean, I don't know. I kind of forgot all about this Redskins team, honestly. You're naming players. I'm like, oh, that guy's on your team. But no, you guys aren't so bad this season, I don't think. I think as long as Kirk Cousins can take a step up, I think you'll be fine. Mm. I really like Jonathan Allen. I think he's an instant difference maker, though. So,
yeah.
Neil, have we mentioned Jamison Crowder? I don't think. I know you love that guy.
Yeah, I think we should go back quickly to your wide receiver question and in general there, Kevin. Sure, we lost Garcon and we lost Jackson, and of course Jackson, I would love to have kept because he's a special player. We replaced them with Pryor, and obviously Dockson's coming back. But as you say, Jamison Crowder has been an ascending player and is almost at that point where you start thinking, yeah, this guy could be truly a special wide receiver. And he's done well in the slot against all you guys.
No, he's killed the Cowboys for sure. I mean, I believe one point in a week 9 or 10 podcast last year, I said Jamison Crowder was like a very poor man's Antonio Brown. So that was a very high compliment for the man. So he is nice. But one thing that just scares me about the Redskins is I think Jordan Reed, I mean, he's clearly your best pass catcher. Can we agree on that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Then I feel last year he missed 2 games, and I feel that's like the healthiest he's been since he came out of the womb.
Yeah,
so like,
no,
if he misses like 6 games, which is more than possible, I just think that's something that the Redskins will have a harder time rebounding this year than they maybe would have last 2 years.
Yeah, last year they certainly played fine when Reed wasn't there, and they also played fine when Jackson wasn't there, as opposed to previous years where they struggled terribly. But yeah, it's a huge season for that offense. But I think the offensive line's in place, and I think that's a big factor for Washington. I think the running game will be better. So, yeah, fingers crossed. That'll be okay. But what do you think about the Kirk Cousins situation? Is he going to be playing 100% when he's on the franchise tag for the second year?
Yeah, I'll keep it short. I mean, I think Cousins is definitely going to put 100% in this year. I mean, he probably doesn't want to be in Washington, and San Francisco probably is, as everyone knows, eyeing him. But if he has a down year, as much as Shanahan loves him and did coach him before, it's going to might put some skepticism in his mind, or John Lynch would be like, are you sure this is the right thing? We're going after Cousins. So Cousins needs to have a great year for himself, not just for the Redskins, but for himself. I mean, I don't think he particularly cares much for the Redskins at this point in his life, and I don't blame him. But, I mean, I think Cousins is going to put it all out on the field this year. And I love Kirk. He's probably top 12 quarterback, definitely top 5 fantasy quarterback for whatever that's worth to anyone. I mean, Kirk, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a Redskin next year just because the team seemingly doesn't want him. They've had 2 years to get a contract done with him, haven't done it. And I think that the Redskins come 2018, when they line up week 1 without Kirk Cousins, they're going to be like, what have we done?
Okay. In terms of the player I think that you don't know about just now, and you'll know about this time next year, I'm going to go with young cornerback Kendall Fuller, who we drafted last year and struggled. He struggled mightily in the slot position, covering in the slot and nickelback. He had a tough year, but I think he's got all the talent in the world, and I think he'll come through this year and do really well. I think he'll be catching that train and he'll be going for it, Kevin, coming up in this season. In terms of our schedule, I always like to look at the first games and the last games. And we start off at home against Philadelphia, so that's obviously a win. And then we play the Rams. That'll be another win. Just let it go, James. Let it go. And then we play two really tough games, home to Oakland and at Kansas City. So if we can get to our bye week, which is early, we've got a bye week after our first, we've played four games and we've got our bye week. If we can get there 2-2, I'll be very happy. And right at the end of the season, our final two games are home against Denver and then the final game at the Giants. And I think, you know something, Sam, I think that game at the Giants could be the decider to see who gets the wild card spot from our division. What do you think?
I mean, I think 10-6 might win the division, so we may disagree a little bit there.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, maybe 10-6 will win the division. We're all going to have the tough schedule with that AFC West. But yeah, okay. I'm going to go for Washington's record at the end of the season to be 9-7. So we're predicting three winning teams so far. Are we going to be predicting a fourth winning team in this division? James, it's over to you. Who are your key additions?
Key additions so far this season, obviously the big one everyone knows about is Alshon Jeffery, wide receiver formerly of Chicago. Also, Timmy Jernigan in the trade, defensive tackle who replaces Benny Logan, which hurts me still to this day that he wanted the money. He left. He signed with Kansas City. Derek Bennett from the draft, LeGarrette Blount, running back, which means Ryan Matthews' days at the same position are numbered. And other than that, Patrick Robinson, cornerback, journeyman cornerback, has played with three teams in the league thus far. We need a solid veteran in the system to do something because we're still cleaning house. The purge is still going on, not only in the secondary, but of all players beloved and drafted by Chip Kelly are slowly being shown the door. And most of those guys were picked in the secondary. So still cleaning house there.
James, are you referring to ESPN college analyst Chip Kelly?
I hate saying his name, and yes, that guy who in the span of 3 years and 14 games ruined my team of all offensive talent. So Kansas City, Washington, and Buffalo, I hope that you have enjoyed three stellar players over the last two seasons. Kansas, and that's what I was getting to. Kansas City did just cut Jeremy Maclin, so I'm hoping that in the near future there's a reunion there, but we're limited on cap space and something has to be done soon.
James, would it be fair to say that following the podcast a couple of weeks ago that Chip Kelly to you is the Mo Lewis for Jay?
Only if we get about four Super Bowl rings out of this. Only. And right now, it's shaping up to be a good franchise at this point through the rebuilding process. There are still a handful of holdovers from when Reed was coach. But those guys are aging, and entering their 8th, 9th, 10th season. So soon they'll be, if not with other teams, they'll be gone from Philadelphia and out of the league altogether. I can only hope that, key veterans like Jason Peters sticks around long enough for us to find his replacement. Mm.
Sam, would it be fair to say that you'd be as impressed as I am with Jim Schwartz and that Philadelphia defense?
Yeah, I mean, that defense is always scaring me. Fletcher Cox is one of, I think, the two best defensive tackles, and he really takes over games. And they just seem to take advantage of weak offensive lines, and that's what the Giants have had. So, yeah, they've scared me for a long time, but Jim Schwartz is a talented coordinator. Probably not a great head coach, but when he's a coordinator, he does great work.
Mm. And, Kevin, with that Schwartz defense, are you looking forward to seeing Derek Barnett coming at Dak Prescott?
Absolutely not. I was actually not very happy when the Eagles drafted him. I mean, I was hoping, but I wouldn't our slack on the day of the draft. People were asking, "Is Jerry going to trade up?" I was like, probably not, but if he did, I wouldn't mind him trading up to mid-teens, low 20s for Barnett. Obviously, Barnett didn't get into the low 20s, but I mean, I always like Barnett. Hugely productive SEC sack total guy. I mean, what's not to like about that? People knock on his athleticism, but like production more important than short and t-shirt athleticism. So, I mean, it already adds to a ferocious rush with Sam said with Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, who I never think gets enough credit. He always scares them.
And also forgot Chris Long.
Yeah, of course, Chris Long. Yeah, absolutely. But surely, James, the pressure is on for your 22nd ranked offense to improve. And the additions there, obviously Jeffrey and so, is it more about just having Carson Wentz into his second season that's going to show improvement there?
I think with the addition of Torrey Smith, Carson Wentz, to Carson Wentz along with Alshon Jeffrey, and another year in the offensive system will help Carson Wentz. The thing that really caught us off guard last year was no one expected Carson Wentz to start, a month before the season. And 5 days before opening day, we found out he's going to be the starting quarterback because we trade Sam Bradford to Minnesota due to the Teddy Bridgewater injury. So it sent shockwaves through the rest of the team. And the adjustment in the first 3 weeks was great. Unfortunately, afterwards, Lane Johnson gets suspended for 10 games and the wheels fall off the entire offense. Consistency across the board from wide receivers having stone hands, the offensive line not being up to snuff to blocking well at times, Ryan Matthews looking like the broken down running back he is at this point of his career. All those things just took its toll on the offense as a whole. We couldn't sustain drives when we needed to, couldn't punch the ball in the end zone on some of those long drives when we did have them, to go 65, 70 yards down the field, get into the red zone and settle for three is disheartening for an offense, especially when you can't punch it in. That's why I'm liking the additions on offense, particularly Jeffrey and Blunt, to at least clear some of that up. And if, like I said, if we can get Macklin in there, I'd be happy seeing Dorrell Green-Beckham and Nelson Aguilar get cut like yesterday. So that's just wishful thinking on my part. But I understand that there's young talent on the roster still being worked in. We did draft a couple of wide receivers in the late rounds. Matt Collins from North Carolina, who played with the Bears second-round pick. Teddy Trubisky looks pretty good so far. And Shelton Gibson from West Virginia. So far in training camp, it is looking like a solid prospect as well. But time will tell if those guys even make the roster at this point. I believe there are about 9 wide receivers signed at this point. They're all not going to go into opening day. So OTAs preseason will pretty much shed light on what's going to shape out.
And do you think you've done enough in the secondary to get by this year?
Oh, absolutely not. The secondary can always get better. I'm happy with our safeties. Jenkins pretty much the anchor in that back end. He's got to get those guys in check to make sure that they're lined up properly. They know what the coverage scheme is. Like I said, Patrick Robinson helps because now we have a veteran at corner who's not pretty much going to get lost in coverage like Nolan Carroll did. You're welcome, Dallas. We also drafted 2 corners, Sidney Jones from Washington and Rasul Douglas from West Virginia. Right now, Sidney Jones is coming off an injury being drafted at the end of his collegiate career. So those guys can be just 50% better than what we had out there last year. They don't have to be perfect at this point, obviously, but they can just give us about 50% more than what we had starting at corner last year. I'd be happy. We ranked dead last in the league as far as giving up long passes of 30 yards or more. And not only that, touchdowns of 30 yards or more in the air. That just can't happen. And especially on – it's one thing if it's a double move, but it wasn't a straight go route in the coverage scheme of the secondary, whether it's man or zone, and you're running down chasing a wide receiver and you look up and you can't find the football on a simple go pattern. That's disheartening that you're turning around full 360 because you have no idea where the ball is, and losing complete track of the wide receiver is just unexcusable. So I'm happy that last year's starting corners are all gone. I wish them luck in new places, but that it was painful to watch in certain cases. It definitely cost us probably 3, maybe 4 games.
So those, apart from those guys you've lost, what other subtractions have you lost that you'll miss apart from Benny Logan? Anybody?
Benny Logan is the one that's going to hurt most, and that's the key. And I get it. He wanted comparable money to Fletcher Cox got the year before. Obviously, there's not enough room under the salary cap to give it to him, again, because some of the signings that Chip Kelly made, I think we still are paying a little bit of Sam Bradford's contract through this year, and then that comes off the books. But our cap situation is horrendous right now compared to what it normally was under Andy Reid, where we could always go out and find that key free agent veteran to come in and just help in, you know, one aspect of the team on some level, offense or defense, and give them the big money needed that was ultimately going to be cap friendly, and even re-signing our own players to cap friendly contracts yet still managing to give them the money they want. Now it's like, you know, in the last 4 years, it's, you know, pay this guy, pay that guy, but none of those guys who got paid that much money are, you know, very few of them are still with the team at this point. You know, obviously Fletcher Cox and Jason Peters deserve the money they got, but down the road is it going to be really, you know, cap friendly? We don't know. Depends on how the salary cap increases over the next couple of years. But at this point, like I said, Benny Logan is the one that hurts most, and nothing really else does. You know, wide receiver wise, we didn't really lose anybody. I would like to see a couple of wide receivers go, and, you know, secondary players who were cut loose, good riddance.
Yeah. Okay, Sam, what do you think of the Eagles? Are you think they're going to be a better team than they were last year?
I think they'll be better. I don't think they'll make the playoffs this year. I think Wentz has some ways to grow. He has a lot of potential. I think Alshon Jeffrey is nice. I think he'll help what Wentz feel comfortable because he doesn't have to make the perfect throw every time anymore. The defense is good. I think if all things go well, they might sneak into the playoffs, but I think there's definitely hope for years to come for them.
Yeah, sure. I would probably agree with that. And James, in terms of players that we are a player or more players, if you want, that we don't know about, that we're going to know about come the end of the season, who are those guys?
I will say keep an eye on Wendell Smallwood. I'm not sure with the signing of LeGarrette Blount how that's going to impact overall the running back situation. Like I said, Ryan Matthews' days are numbered. Kenyon Barner typically took over when Matthews was hurt or hobbled at any point. He became the primary back with Smallwood being sprinkled in. Smallwood's also our primary kick returner. So I look for Smallwood to be more impactful in the running game. Depending on how they deploy the running backs this year. I'm actually looking for him to take a giant step forward and actually compete with Barner for more playing time. So I can see a flip there with him stepping up above Barner and being the number two back behind Blount. That is if Blount does become the starter, but that's not really set in stone. But offensively, I'm looking at Wendell Smallwood.
Andy, on the defensive side of the ball?
Defensively, I would love to say Derek Barnett, the rookie from Tennessee, who we drafted with our first-round pick. But considering it's an eight-man rotation on the defensive line and whether he produces or not, he's really pushing, I believe his name is Jalen Smith, our defensive end, who's the backup. One of the backup defensive linemen who didn't play well last year, which is why they initially signed Chris Long. I don't see much going on defensively. Pretty much all the names are known at this point, so there's no one who's really going to sneak up and come out of nowhere unless one of our rookies, Sidney Jones or Rasul Douglas, takes over a starting spot at corner and does some damage. Everyone's pretty much known on the defensive side.
Okay. And give me your record then. What's the record going to be for Philadelphia? Well, let's have a look. First of all, the games you're playing. What are the pressure points in your season? What's going to turn it in from a losing record to a winning record?
7-9, not that bad again first year. Could have easily have been 10-6. Three games had gone the other way. But there were more games like that we won that we probably should have lost. Schedule-wise, I'm concerned again because we are playing the AFC West. We're also playing the NFC West. So for those of you who are traveling to Seattle like we are this year, I'd be worried about that as well. But we are making a couple of West Coast trips, like I said, Seattle already, and two trips to L.A. as we're playing both the Chargers and the Rams this year, both in L.A. So those will be interesting games, especially the L.A. game since it's the first matchup of last year's top two picks. Division games, of course, are always bothersome. Opening up on the road in Washington is not fun. But depending on how your offense looks with the losses at wide receiver. It could be a very interesting game. Not going to call it a win or loss at this time. And again, we close out versus Dallas at home, which last year, I understand, you know, I get it. They rested everybody. Technically, they gave us the game. Probably shouldn't be that situation this year. Two teams probably could be fighting for something, I don't know, towards the end of the season. No other game really stands out too badly. Maybe week two in Kansas City. And the Thursday night game we have this year is in Carolina. We do have a couple of good Monday night matchups, one with the Raiders that's home. That actually could provide a lot of fireworks depending on how good things are going, and that's in week 16. So depending on how well our offense has clicked at that point with the Raiders, Derek Carr coming back, talking about a lot of weapons on both offenses and, you know, solid defenses. You know, if they play well, this could be anything from a shootout to a nail biter. So that Raiders game is pretty much the one I have penciled most outside of the division.
Okay, and give us your division record for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man, you're making me put me in a tough spot here. I want to say 10-6. I'm going to go 8-8. One game better than last year. I'm being modest. I do think we can play better. We got off to a fast start last year, and I honestly thought at worst case we would be 8-8, if not 10-6 last year after the 3-0 start, especially after the way we demolished Pittsburgh. But like I said, the suspension of Lane Johnson coming during the bye week and then the adjustment. Halapulivati Vaitai is a much better backup tackle now, so he can easily step in if necessary. Yes, I know you like that, Neil. I know you like that. But to be perfectly honest, with the schedule and the teams that we're playing, yes, there are a couple of games I'm like, yes, well, there's no reason we should lose that game or that game, but there are other games on here that are toss-ups that we can easily win or lose. So we have to win some road games, though. And like I said, with three games literally out west, not counting the Kansas City Chiefs, that's a Midwest trip, but straight up West Coast games in Seattle and two in LA playing both the Chargers and the Rams. You know, travel time could pose some problems, you know, with that late start. They might get complacent and forget that, hey, we're, you know, playing a game right now. Things happen when you travel east to west and vice versa when you travel west to east. So I'm going to stick with 8-8 for right now. That could change, you know, after the first couple of weeks of the season. But I remain hopefully optimistic that Wentz's play elevates and, you know, we become somewhat of a threat or at least, you know, tease a little bit, you know, the fans' possible playoff run.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. Right, guys, Kevin's had to go for his train, so we're not going to get his division prediction. But, Sam, let's start with you. Give us your 1-4 in this division.
I'm going Giants, Cowboys, Redskins, Eagles.
Okay, James.
I hate doing this, but I'm gonna go. Oh goodness, this is painful. Dallas, Giants, Eagles, Redskins.
Okay, and I'm going to go. And I'm going to go Dallas, and then Washington and the Giants going down to that final game to see who gets second place in the division and a wild card, and Philadelphia taking up the rear. But what I would say is I think we've got four teams here who could all end up with if not winning records, at least with the worst record being 8-8. Would you agree, or is that crazy talk?
It's possible. Yeah, I could also see three teams coming out of this division for the playoffs, though.
You look around the division, James, and you around the NFC, and it's difficult to find another division who has two really good teams, isn't it?
I mean, the other option is the South.
The West.
You know, the Falcons are probably going to be good. The West? Mm-hmm. Who besides the Seahawks?
Yeah,
the Cardinals. Cardinals, I guess. I can't trust Palmer. He's really bad last season.
And that's why I hesitate. I don't know about them, you know, because honestly, Palmer is still being literally he's being wheeled out there. He's hurt every year. They don't have a viable backup. I do understand they did draft a quarterback this year. I think the sooner they get a new quarterback out there in place of Palmer, the better they are, because as well as they played 2 years ago when they made the NFC Championship game, they could have easily lost it all because Palmer did get hurt like one of the last 2 weeks of the season and was questionable even their first playoff game. But they need to find a replacement for him and fast, like somebody who can just step in and take over like right now. I don't trust the South too much because of the revolving door of how, aside from the Carolina Panthers, they haven't had repeat winners in that division. The Saints still have no defense. The Buccaneers are up and coming. They can make some noise. We don't know what we're going to get from the Carolina Panthers. If they stop running Cam Newton, they could be devastatingly awesome. And the Falcons, even being here in Atlanta, they tend to fix one thing and something else just falls apart. You know, not for lack of trying anything like that, but it's like they go out, they fix whatever holes they have, and then something they weren't completely expecting happens. And then it's a big question, well, why didn't we fix that? But that didn't need fixing. You know, Matt Ryan coming back should provide, you know, all the fireworks in the offense that they had last year. But, you know, defensively, they definitely have to get better.
Yep. And I'm sure the NFC South guys will be discussing that at length. We can relax here, put our feet up, and have a proper smug face, knowing that our division is probably the best in the league. It is the best division in the league. And I think, guys, Sam, thank you very much for joining tonight. It wouldn't be the same without you. Same to you, James. And to Kevin, who's went off for his train. Kevin, it's great to have you on the show. And we will, throw this over to Jay, who's going to tell us something about how terrible he thinks the NFC East is and how great some other division is. Jay, you're wrong, but you carry on.
Well, Neil, I'm so glad that you think that the things that I'm going to say are completely wrong, but the things you're going to say are completely right. And ultimately, as I look at this division, is it the best division in football? Well, let's see here. If I'm looking at just simply win-loss records, it does appear to be the best division in the NFC, and it does appear to be better than any division in the AFC as well. The problem with being the best division is that all your teams are going to beat up on each other. And so as I look at the Cowboys, who were 13-3 last season, I don't think that's going to be what their record will be this coming season. I see them more at 11-5. The Giants is the team that I think is going to take the biggest step back. They were 11-5 last season. I see them at 7-9, and this is why. Three of their first four games of the season are all on the road, two of them against division opponents, Dallas week one, Eagles week three, and then they're on the road against the up-and-coming Tampa Bay Buccaneers in week four. They do host Detroit in week two. Now, depending on where you see Detroit versus the Giants, that game I think is the one that could go either way, but I don't like the Giants in any of those road games, quite honestly. I do have them getting a surprise victory at Denver, but then another loss follows that up with Seattle before their bye week. So I'm not a big fan of the Giants, and you can say it's my patriot homerisms, whatever you want to say, but I mean, honestly, I think the Giants take a step back. The Redskins, I think, will take a small step forward. And instead of 8-7-1, they'll see a 10-6 record at the end of the season. And the Eagles, I see them taking one step forward and agree with James that 8-8 is, I think, a reasonable number for the Eagles. Could they win more? Maybe, but I don't necessarily think they're there yet. So that's how I see the NFC East Division. What do you think? Send us your opinions, nextfanup@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can respond to us right on Facebook, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. And you're not going to want to miss any of our division previews. All month long, we'll preview a different division in every show. We've already done the AFC North. The next division up, a division close to my heart, the AFC East, is next up on the docket. So you're going to want to make sure you're subscribed to us on iTunes, TuneIn, AHA Radio, or Stitcher. While you're there, you can leave us a review like Goat Herder did on Stitcher. He writes, while the concept of the show is brilliant, highly knowledgeable and engaged representatives for each team in the NFL participating in roundtable discussions, the best part of the show is Pod Vader. Football Today died the true death the day he left it, but behold, it arose as a phoenix from its ashes as Next Fan Up. Pod's brilliance only is surpassed by his good humor, and his steely gray eyes are dreamy. Well, I apparently have a big fan. Thank you, Goat Herder. I appreciate the kind words. He added, happy birthday, Pod Vader, as I celebrated a birthday recently. But you don't have to express the great nature of Pod Vader in your reviews to get your review read on the show. Oh, no. We'll read bad reviews, too. But do leave us a review. It helps with the show and helps more people find the podcast, as we're not hiding any secrets here. We want everyone to enjoy the show. We are by the fan, for the fan. And if you're a fan of the NFL, that's what we do here. We talk about football. We'll go deep into the topics we know you want to talk about. So please do subscribe so you don't miss any of our division previews. And with the NFC East now in the books, I bring in Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.